Hello and welcome to our micronutrients module. This part is about vitamin A. We're going to learn all the things, the ins and outs of vitamin A, how it works, and how you can use it to help your clients when they need it. So again, before we begin, make sure that you know and you let your clients know that this is not medical advice and it's not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship. It's just sharing of knowledge and education to help people to balance, create just a wonderful healing environment in their body so their body can do the work. But if they're under any medical care, taking any kind of medications, just make sure that you run it by your practitioner. So good old vitamin A, it's a fat-soluble vitamin. Remember we talked about vitamins that were either water-soluble or fat. Vitamin A is a fat-soluble vitamin, and it's actually really a group of compounds, not just one. And you'll get all that you need to know about what these are. There's retinol, retinoic acid, and then there's the provitamin A carotenoids. Now, some of these are not actually pro-vitamin A. They can't be converted to, but I put them there for completeness because they're carotenoids that you know of. So beta-carotene is the one we know of most. It's the most abundant and the most important of the carotenoids for making vitamin A. Then there's also alpha and gamma carotene. So alpha and gamma carotene. Not as well known, not as abundant, not as important. And then we've got lutein, lycopene, and zeaxanthin. And they all have roles that we'll look at in different pathways in the body, but they're basically, most of the issues with those happen in the eyes. They're mostly antioxidants. So they are carotenoids, but they can't actively be converted into vitamin A. So what we're going to do is look at the chemistry behind it, look at some pathways, so you have an understanding. But I want you to know, you're not going to necessarily remember every single chemical. You're not going to need to remember. You just need to be able to do the research if someone presents and has issues going on. So it's like you learn it, you get it, and you might not be able to remember the chemical difference between retinol and retinoic acid, but you know that they exist. And if you're working with somebody and they come in and they're on some medications or they're on some supplements, that you'll be able to look up and get what's going on for them. So let's look at the structure, okay? So the first one is retinol. And again, I don't want you to memorize this, but know that, you know, these are, they look similar to things that we've looked at already, you know, long chains. So this is kind of like got a long chain of carbon hydrogens. The carbon and hydrogens are not repeated throughout. So the carbons are at the top, the hydrogens at the bottom. It's just a typical nomenclature that we do in chemical structures. But just want you to see that there are slight differences between them. And when we look at some pathways, we'll see, you know, that certain things happen in the eyes and in the skin that cause the conversion from one form to the other. Do you have to memorize these? No. Do you have to know that the retinol has a CH2OH at the end, whereas the retinol has a CHO at the end with a double bond with the O? You don't need to be able to memorize this, but it's just knowing that there's such subtle differences between storage forms and active forms and form in the liver, the form that's in the bloodstream, etc. So retinol is sometimes called retinaldehyde. Retinoic acid has a carboxylic acid at the end, COOH at the end. And then beta-carotene, you can see it looks like two of the retinols, right? There's two of them and you split it in the middle. Your body has to be able to cleave that apart. And there's a particular enzyme that's required to do that. And there is a particular SNP that's fairly common that can thwart that breakdown. So you may not be as efficient as you need to be at breaking the carotene into vitamin A to vitamin A's. I happen to have a heterozygous on that SNP, and that heterozygous means I got one good gene, one bad gene from we don't know which parent. Okay, so I'm not going to necessarily be as efficient at that. Once I saw that I had that SNP, I just started to periodically take an active vitamin A supplement. Maybe I take it twice a week and I take a few drops. And because it's a fat soluble, it does get stored. So I don't have to worry about taking it every single day. So when some question came up about the active, how do we know... think about the wording of the question. Well, there was a question that came up in one of our discussions that had to do with the form to take and knowing what specific incidences. How do you know if a person needs physiologic doses versus therapeutic doses? So if a person has a SNP, so they have this problem with the breakdown of the beta carotene, the enzyme, you're going to have to make sure that they're getting those the extra, just because it's an insurance policy. You know, they may be active, they may be doing it just fine, but they may not be. If they have two of those SNPs, you definitely should be just supplementing. And if they have the SNP plus a bunch of symptoms, like, you know, they complain about night blindness and they've got some skin issues, then for sure you'd want to go with slightly higher doses. But with the fat-soluble ones, you don't need to supplement them every single day. Some people are taking vitamin D as prescribed by their doctors, and they're taking it like once a week. They're taking a very large dose. You can do that with any of the fat solubles, just so you know that. So that's the structure. What's some of the functions? Okay, well, vision, super, super important. And we're going to go into details about how vitamin A works in the visual fields. Gene transcription, you know, coding from the proteins from the DNA. Embryonic development and reproduction, that's super important. Not only the reproductive system of the mom or the dad, but the embryonic development, the development of that fetus, super important. And we'll look at some of that in a little bit more detail. Hematopoiesis, which is the red blood cell production. We're going to look at that in a little more detail too, as to how the vitamin A works there. Other things that it's important for are protein synthesis. There's a few pathways for making proteins that are vitamin A dependent. Cell differentiation, which is why it's used a lot in cancer therapies. Integrity of skin and epithelial tissue. It's also used in acne, but there's some dangers of the high doses that are used in acne, so we have to be careful about that. And it's synthetic forms. An immune system, vitamin A is an important antioxidant, so it has some important immune system functions, important in bone metabolism and also antioxidant. So let's take a look at more detail. So this is another picture of the chemical structure. And there were the reason I put this in here again was there was a few things that I wanted you to see. So beta carotene there is at the top. If you just eat plant-based foods, the kind of vitamin A you're going to get is beta-carotene. There is no beta-carotene, there is no free-form vitamin A in any of the plant sources. You need to get it from animal sources. So most of us can do this just fine, but you need to be aware that some people may not be able to, and they may actually be showing signs of vitamin A deficiency that just supplementing with beta-carotene isn't going to help. So let's look at, so that's... It's estimated that in 10% can be converted to vitamin A. So if you put somebody on a supplement of beta carotene, say it's 25,000 IUs a day, they may be only getting 2,500 IUs a day. So that's why the supplements of beta carotene are going to be much, much higher. Retinal palmitate is a liver ester. It's stored in the liver. It's a form of that. And it's also the form that gets carried in these little kind of pockets called chylomicrons. And chylomicrons actually carry fat-soluble vitamins and fats from the intestinal tract to the rest of the body. So these retinal palmitates get put into these chylomicrons when they cross the border from the lumen of the intestine into the bloodstream. And then they get carried around and they get delivered. They get delivered back to the liver for storage there as well. But they also get put into triglycerides, phospholipids, and various, they're used to make various proteins. So the chylomicrons are actually a type of phospholipid. So the other thing about retinol palmitate is that it gets converted by hydrolysis reaction into what's called all-trans retinol. Now, we think about trans fat and we think they're bad. Well, trans fatty acids in the form of omega-3s can be very damaging because the body's not expecting them. But this form of retinoic acid or retinol is good for the body. I mean, it's supposed to be all trans. And the trans means there's no bends up. You see the bends in it? It's just very straight. Okay? So there's all trans retinol and all trans retinal. And again, I'm just giving you this so you get an idea of the chemistry. Do you have to memorize it? No. I had to review this to really remember. But the reason I'm giving you this is because I want you to understand how it works in vision. So the all trans retinol is what's important for the retina. And in the retina, it actually gets converted to this 11-cis retinol. And just so you have an understanding of the chemistry, when you have a number and then a cis, that's saying that at the 11th bond, there's a bend. So let's just, as an example, let's go down to the all trans, right? You see that it's just straight. You've got the cycle here, and then you've got the hydrogen and the carbons going across. It's straight. When you go to this 13 cis, okay, at the 13th carbon, you get a bend so that the carboxylic group goes down, okay? When you look at the 11 cis, it's back a couple of places and one, two. So it's back two more places from there. The bend is there. And the 9 cis, it's back at the 9th carbon. Make sense? So this is just, you know, a little bit of geeky chemistry. I know some of you love the geeky chemistry, some of you don't. There's no need for you to have to memorize this. It's just, it was rough in my mind just trying to understand it, but I really wanted you to understand it because it's the conversion from the all trans into the 11 cis that happens in the retina that actually stimulates the rods in the eyes for vision and is a chemical called rhodopsin, okay? The form down here, the 9 cis, is the form that's actually useful for gene transcription. So the 11 cis is the vision form of the eye, the 11 cis retinal. The 9 cis retinoic acid is for gene transcription. And then the all trans can also get retinol can be converted through an enzyme called alcohol dehydrogenase to all trans retinal. Okay, and the alcohol dehydrogenase is an enzyme that also breaks down, guess what, alcohol, right? So the reason I'm giving you this is so that if you are, you know, researching something for someone and you're looking at vitamin A as a deficiency possibility or as a therapeutic intervention, and you're reading articles, you may get completely confused when they start to talk about all these things. Know that it's just a slight variation in the chemical structure that changes the function of the particular vitamin A version. And that's all I want to say about that. So let's look at the vitamin A in vision. So now that we've looked at the various forms, this is the reason that I wanted to show you that. You've got the all trans retinol that's going around the bloodstream, and then it gets absorbed into the retinal pigment epithelium. So that's in the eye, the retina. And then that gets converted to all trans retinal ester, to 11 cis retinol, and then 11 cis retinal. And that's what goes into the photoreceptors. Okay, so the light shines on your eyes, and why do you see? Well, because of the action of rhodopsin. So then it basically goes in, signals that, hey, we see this thing. So the rhodopsin then gets converted to opsin, and then it's added to the all-trans retinal, and it goes back to all-trans retinol, back into the bloodstream. So it's actually reused to a certain extent. So that's the vision. We've also got vitamin A and gene transcription. And so what I wanted you to see is that the 9 cis retinoic acid goes into the receptors in the cytoplasm of the cell, and it binds onto retinoid receptors. That's what RXR is. The trans retinol goes into the retinoic acid receptors, and the retinoic acid response elements then turn on the gene transcription. So vitamin A is critical for it. Again, do you have to memorize this? Do you have to know what all this is? No, it's good to understand it so that when you're reading technical papers, you know. And if somebody is having difficulties with their eyes or they say they're on a specific nutrient or medication for a specific problem, you'll at least have some familiarity and be able to go back and research this. Now, for lots more details, I'm giving you on the site in this section that says advanced. I'm giving you access to lots of different websites and also a book that has a lot more detail about this should you want to study it in more detail. Okay, what I want to give you here is enough for you to be able to use therapeutically with your clients. If you want to go way more deep and you wanted to start doing some research, then I highly recommend you check out the extra sources. So how does vitamin A work with immunity? Well, retinoic acid is produced by something called antigen-presenting cells, APCs, and these include macrophages and dendritic cells. Now, rest assured, we will go into way more detail about these antigen-presenting cells and immunity when we do our immune system module. We're trying to build up to this. Well, retinoic acid acts on the dendritic cells to regulate differentiation and migration. So these antigen-presenting cells are basically the cells that grab onto an antigen being the bad guy, right? It could be pollen, which is not necessarily bad, but we perceive it as bad. It could be a particle of food, a protein from a food, or it could actually be streptococcus or something really harmful for the body. That goes into the bloodstream. We say, oh, antigen-presenting cell, grab onto it and then present it to the macrophages and the killer cells so that it can get rid of it. It also presents it to other cells to memorize it. But we'll talk more about that when we do immune system. I just want you to get the idea of where that vitamin A is important here. So the retinoic acid can be produced by antigen-presenting cells. It then acts on the dendritic cells to regulate the differentiation and the migration. So how to say what antibodies are going to be active, what are these going to work on, and what antigens are we going to look for? It's required for the differentiation of T lymphocytes called CD4s into regulatory T lymphocytes. And the regulatory T lymphocytes keep us from going into an overactive immune system like an autoimmune, and also keep us at the right level so we don't have an underactive autoimmune. So it balances the T helper cells and the T killer cells, basically. The all trans retinoic acid and the retinoic acid receptors signal to promote the conversion of those CD4 lymphocytes into effective helper T cells. And we'll talk more about TH1 when we look at autoimmunity. This produces pro-inflammatory cytokines. So this is how the body is going to get rid of this antigen. So you could see that if vitamin A is insufficient, we're not going to get these conversions going on, and we're not going to get these pro-inflammatory cytokines to actually get rid of the antigens. We can get an overproduction or an underproduction, and vitamin A is here to regulate it. It might also have a role in autoimmunity, and we'll talk more about that role at the point when we go into autoimmunity. So let's look at embryonic development and reproduction. Embryo, as you know, is the little baby when it's still in mama's womb. And it's important to note that vitamin A excess and deficiency can cause birth defects. So it's really important if you're working with a pregnant client that you ask questions about their vitamin A intake. And really be careful if you do end up putting them on vitamin A, that you're careful about how much you tell them to take. I once had a situation where I wanted somebody to take a high dose of vitamin A for 3 days because she was in an acute viral infection. And high dose meaning about 100,000 IUs, whereas the recommended daily allowance is about 5, and therapeutically we may go into 10 or 20. So it's a lot of vitamin A. And I said, 3 days. I said, take 20 drops. 20, was it 5? I think it was 5,000 per drop. Yes, so I said 20 drops or 10 drops twice a day for 3 days is what I told her to do. She calls me up on day 2 or before even day 3 finished. I'm not going to have enough of this to last. I said, I was gasping. What do you mean there's enough in that bottle to last for 3 months? And she said, well, I've been taking 10 droppers twice a day. I'm like, oh my God. So 10 droppers is the equivalent of, say, 20 to 30 drops times 10. I had told her to take 10 drops twice a day. She was taking 20 to 30 times the amount that I told her to take. That's enough to put you into a vitamin A excess. I told her to stop immediately. So you have to be really careful. Maybe make sure you write it down. Get a little sticky, or actually a label that sticks to the bottle and puts the dose on it, so you don't run the risk of people getting confused. Because a lot of times they get confused. They don't know, right? If 10 droppers, okay, that seems like a lot, but I'll do it. She said it was for the cold. Yeah, you got to be careful. So retinoic acid is critical for the development of the baby's heart, eyes, ears, limbs, lungs, and visceral organs. And it's especially important in the lung maturation. So when a baby's born at like 8 months old, they haven't had a chance to really mature their lungs. It's really important that supplementation of that baby for with the extra vitamin A, so that they don't end up with chronic lung disease. And also sometimes it can be fatal. So it's real, vitamin A is super important in this particular case, like for preterm babies. So hematopoiesis is basically the creation of new blood cells and the maturation. And we'll go through more of this when we do our immune system, but just wanted to show you the picture that we're basically starting with what's called a stem cell. It comes from the bone marrow. They get produced into different types of like precursors to the lymphocytes or neutrophils, and then they get converted down. So vitamin A is important to help with the differentiation. So this hematopoietic stem cell is just this undifferentiated white blood cell or blood cell, and it gets converted into, not white blood cell, but blood cell. It can get converted into red blood cells or white blood cells. Okay, so, and again, we'll go through more of this in detail in the blood and the immune modules. However, so hematopoietic stem cell, you want it to differentiate. If it doesn't differentiate, you may not get the right amount of red blood cells. Maybe you have red blood cell count. Maybe you have high blood cell count, and you got something like not hemochromatosis, but there's a name for it, and I'm drawing a blank on it. However, it's the excess of red blood cells. So you can get that. You can have low levels, more red blood cells and less white blood cells. And that can cause a problem with the immune system. So the other thing that vitamin A does is it regulates programmed cell death in the red blood cells precursors. What does that mean? Well, cells are supposed to live and reproduce a certain number of times. Apoptosis, programmed in, dies. If that apoptosis gets altered and it happens sooner than it should, then you're going to have a problem because you're killing off cells faster than you're creating them. If it doesn't happen when it's supposed to, then you have these used up, worn out cells that can get used over and over, and they're not going to have the function they need to. So vitamin A is super important here. So if you're working with people who have immune system dysfunction or they have some sort of an anemia, vitamin A could be very important. And we'll see when we look at the interactions later how important it is in the interaction with iron. So it also increases hemoglobin concentration. And hemoglobin is the carrier for oxygen in the bloodstream. So when somebody's anemic, they are going to have low levels of hemoglobin. So if they're low in vitamin A, they may have decreased hemoglobin concentration, which means that it can create an anemia. The other thing that the vitamin A does is it facilitates mobilization of iron from storage sites, and usually those are in the liver, to the developing red blood cell, so it gets incorporated into making the hemoglobin. So vitamin A is often overlooked when we're working with somebody with anemia, and it's a very important thing to keep in mind. Again, you might not remember all these mechanisms, but if I just give you facts without the mechanisms, you may not remember the facts. So if I give you the facts, I give you the things it's important for, and you don't remember the mechanism, that's okay. Let that be the 90% that you forget. You can always go back and it'll refresh your memory. You'll go, oh yeah, I saw that before. So on a summary, in terms of blood cell production, Vitamin A is important for the differentiation of the common stem cells into their appropriate types of blood cells. It regulates the programmed cell death in the red blood cell precursors. It increases hemoglobin concentration and facilitates the mobilization of iron from storage for incorporation into the hemoglobin. So it's very important in blood cell synthesis. Let's take a quick look at vitamin A and thyroid, because that's very important too. Vitamin A deficiency will increase TSH. So this is deficiency specifically. If we have a deficiency of vitamin A, it can decrease the amount of TSH that you have. It also can increase the size of the thyroid gland because it may increase the uptake. It may decrease the uptake of iron by iodine, so the thyroid swells and gets larger. It impairs the synthesis and iodination of thyroglobulin, which is an important constituent of thyroid hormone, which we'll learn a lot more about. And then it increases the circulating concentrations of thyroid hormones. So you may end up with some very strange thyroid, like you may have an increased TSH, but also increases in the thyroid hormones. And you may think, oh, maybe it's a pituitary problem. It could be vitamin A. So if you're looking at someone's labs and you see some weird presentations on the thyroid, you know, like I wouldn't expect increased TSH and high thyroid hormones. I would expect increased TSH and low. You might be looking at a vitamin A deficiency. So nutrient interactions. Let's look at this because a lot of nutrients interact with each other. There are specific considerations for not taking things together or do take things together. Let's look at the nutrient interactions between vitamin A and zinc. Zinc deficiency results in a decreased synthesis of retinol binding protein. Retinol binding protein is a protein that transports retinol or vitamin A to the peripheral tissues. Zinc deficiency will also lead to potential toxicity of retinol because zinc actually protects against the potential toxicity of retinol. Zinc deficiency can result in decreased activity of retinol palmitate, the enzyme that releases the retinol from storage. When you've got the storage form in the liver and you want to release it into circulation because it's needed, if you don't have enough zinc, you can't really do that adequately. And it's also required for an enzyme that converts from retinol to retinal. And you saw in that chart, there was a lot of interconversions from one form to the other in order for the eyes to be able to function, let alone a lot of the others. So zinc is super important for vitamin A function. So you might be looking at, oh, this person has a vitamin A deficiency signs and I'm giving them vitamin A, but it's not going away. You may have to look at their zinc. Similar is vitamin A and iron. And vitamin A deficiency can exacerbate iron deficiency anemia by altering the metabolism of the iron, okay? We looked at how vitamin A was important for releasing iron from stores so they can be incorporating into hemoglobin. You also looked at how vitamin A improves iron status among children and pregnant women. When they actually look at it, people who are anemic, if you don't add the vitamin A in a lot of children and pregnant women especially, you're not going to get the iron up unless you add the vitamin A because of the interactions. They've done studies where they give people vitamin A alone, iron alone, or the combination together. And it definitely reduces anemia symptoms and signs in the blood more effectively when they're both given together. And in rats, we haven't done this in humans yet, but iron deficiency alters the plasma and liver levels of vitamin A. So you can see that vitamin A is important for anemia. We may not even be thinking of it in terms of anemia, but vitamin A is an important nutrient to consider when somebody says, I've been iron deficient all my life. I've had anemia my whole life. Maybe they have a vitamin A deficiency. And it's one that's rarely uncovered. You know, the conventional medical approach is to say, well, we get plenty of this stuff in our food. We don't need to take extra nutrients. When in reality, we know that a lot of the problems that people are having can be related to vitamin and minerals deficiencies. So let's look at some of the things that vitamin A deficiency can cause. It can cause night blindness. And night blindness is something that a lot of people have where you see fine during the day, but as soon as you go out in the dark, it's like everything kind of blurs together and it's really hard to differentiate shapes. So that has to do with the deficiency of vitamin A and the effects on the rods and the cones. Can actually lead to overt blindness and severe vitamin A deficiency because we're not getting the activity of, you know, when the light comes into the retinas of activating the rhodopsin. There's another condition called keratomalacia, and that's basically a softening of the cornea. And the cornea is the outer part of the eye, which protects what's inside. And when that softens and gets affected by vitamin A deficiency, you can have distortions in vision as a result. Now, not related to eyes, there are some other things related to skin. Xerosis is another name for dry skin, or rough dry skin can be caused by vitamin A because of the effects it has on the skin maturation. It's also can affect the sense of smell, can affect the receptors in the nose that affect the sense of smell. Deficiency of vitamin A can lead to fatigue for some of the reasons we already talked about, right, with the anemia, but for others, like affecting the thyroid function. So vitamin A is super important for energy. When you're dealing with somebody with fatigue, make sure you assess their vitamin A status and get them to do extra through whole food supplementation or supplementation to help with that. Can also lead to keratinization, where the skin actually becomes hard, dry, and rough and scaly. So it's like, it's almost like scars or scabby or healed scabs that are over a lot of parts of the body. And that is an increase in keratin as a result of vitamin A deficiency. So these are all the kind of things you'd be looking for when you're working with people. So what's the recommended dietary allowance? Okay, so it's 3,000 IUs for men, 2,300 for women, 2,600 for pregnant women, 19 and older, 4,300 for lactating women. So it's really important for lactating women to make sure they get enough and more than the usual amount. The good news is when you supplement with vitamin A, you can get vitamin A, micellized vitamin A drops that are 5,000 per one drop. So it's a really easy supplement to take. Now, are these the dosages for ideal health? No, not necessarily. But you've got to make sure that your person is getting at least this amount or they're under the RDA, which is minimum for survival. Okay. And some people need more than that based on, you know, what kind of vision they have, what kind of genes they have, whether they've had trauma, immune assault, etc. So let's take a look at carotenoids. Carotenoids are the precursors of vitamin C, as I said before. So in addition to being precursors to vitamin A, the carotenoids also have antioxidant activity of their own. They do protect the eyes. There are specific mechanisms by which the carotenoid molecules will help the eyes, and especially things like zeaxanthin and lutein. Lutein is really high in kale. Is one of the vegetables that it's really high in, and it's very important for eye health. So there are two classes of carotenes. You've got the class that has the alpha carotene, the beta carotene, and the lycopene, and then you've got the xanthophylls. So the carotenes have the alpha carotene, beta carotene, and lycopene, and then the xanthophylls are the beta cryptoxanthin, lutein, and zeaxanthin. So these are the various carotenoids. So when you see these, you go, oh, I didn't know lutein was a carotenoid. Good, it's related to the vitamin A family, but it can be converted there. But it has some of the similar functions in the health of the eye. So lutein, lycopene, and zeaxanthin can't be converted to retinol, so they don't have vitamin A activity, but they do have eye protective activity on their own. Let's look at toxicity and excess of vitamin A. So you can have excess vitamin A and it can lead to toxicity. High intake of vitamin A can accumulate in the liver, right? Because it's fat soluble. So if you have somebody taking, like this person was taking like probably 800,000 units of vitamin A for 3 days, that's a lot of vitamin A and that can be stored in the liver. Had she continued that, she could easily get to a toxic load. Children tend to be the most sensitive to overdose. So really being careful that, you know, if you're adding vitamin A to a child, that they don't always also have vitamin A in their multivitamin. So really careful. There's some controversial testing where they took smokers and they gave them lots of vitamin A, excessive amounts, and it seems like it caused some side effects. You know, it's a controversial testing, but it may be just that because the smokers have some other compromises in their system, that the excess vitamin A, they weren't able to handle it. Excess vitamin A can lead to birth defects, so you really want to be careful in giving a mom who's pregnant too much vitamin A. But you also don't want to give her too little vitamin A, because too little vitamin A can lead to birth defects. So it's really important with pregnant women that you're careful and that you observe and that you don't give them too high a dose of any supplement. So some of the signs of toxicity. So if you're concerned that maybe they were taking too much, you ask questions. Do they have nausea, coarse hair? Is their hair falling out? Of course, other things can cause nausea, coarse hair, and loss of hair. Thyroid in problems can cause that too. Dry, flaky skin, fatigue, blurry vision, drowsiness, enlarged liver, headaches, bone pain. So if they have bunches of these, especially if they have like the enlarged liver, bone pain, things like that, you really want to be looking. Just keep it in the safe zone, okay? Keep it in the safe zone. I generally wouldn't give somebody more than 10 or 20,000 IUs of vitamin A for the long haul, unless we were checking their levels. So here's some sources. These were taken from one of the websites in just general lists. And this is the combination retinol and carotene, just going from high to low. And so this just gives you an idea of some of the foods that have good sources and not so good. But this list is from that WH Foods site that I gave you the link to in another presentation, and it's also listed in your resources section. So sweet potatoes tend to be right at the top, but that's beta carotene, right? So these are the vegetable sources. So these are all beta carotene. If you're looking at the animal sources, they're kind of mixed in with the beta carotene. So you really can't compare apples to apples. So if, like, say liver has 5,000 IUs of vitamin A per serving, and peppers have 25,000. The peppers have a lot less because it's beta carotene and there's got to be converted. So the active forms of vitamin A, the already converted forms of vitamin A, are going to be in the animal products. So you can see livers here and whitefish is here. But what I want to say is, like, maybe whitefish doesn't have as much vitamin A as, say, peppers, but you have to look at the fact that the peppers, it's in the form of beta carotene. Okay, so it's really important to take a look, and you can look at these charts, and the chart in the World's WHO Foods has all of them listed with amounts, and you just go to that chart. So what else? Vitamin A has been found to be super important in infectious disease control. They've given people high doses for hepatitis, like super physiologic doses, for 3 or 4 days and knocked out acute hepatitis. Okay, for more chronic hepatitis C, it would be moderate to high doses for a more extended period of time. When you have deficiencies of vitamin A, you have increased risk of various kinds of infectious diseases. So if you have somebody that gets pneumonia a lot, you may want to look to see, do they have a chronic decrease deficiency of vitamin A? Maybe they're relying just on beta carotene and they don't have the genetics to convert it, or they're not adapting and taking a lot more of it. Sometimes it affects the gut, so it can cause diarrhea. Vitamin A deficiency can lead to measles, more outbreaks. So, you know, all this stuff when people talk about getting measles vaccines, what about talking about making sure vitamin A is up to snuff? It can be related to malaria and a whole lot of other infections. So vitamin A, especially in combination with vitamin C and even vitamin D, for short, high-level doses, can be really effective for acute diseases, acute infectious diseases. So some of the therapeutic uses, and this is where you might be using higher doses to get rid of it in short term, infectious disease, like we just talked about, hepatitis, which is an infectious disease, but also chronic hepatitis and hep C has been helped with vitamin A. If you're working with somebody with hep C, then go ahead and do the research and find the papers and get the right dosages and work with that person and see if you can get some help. It's important for leaky gut repair because vitamin A is so important for the immunoglobulins that line the gut, for the mucus that lines the gut. When that gets damaged, vitamin A needs to be addressed. Also for acne, and you know, you can use vitamin A itself for acne and get some results. There's also Accutane, which is a drug which is very high levels of a particular type of vitamin A molecule, and it can be very toxic. So you have to really be careful if somebody's on Accutane. You might be able to get some good results with combining vitamin A and maybe some zinc and looking at their hormones and looking at their sugar intake, their fatty acid intake. So a lot of other things go in here. Vitamin A can be helpful in restoring night vision. Remember we talked about how that works with the rods and the cones and how night vision impairment can be a problem with vitamin A. And also beta carotene is very helpful as itself. It doesn't have to be converted to help with the night vision. And then finally, eczema. There have been a lot of cases of people with eczema getting high doses of A. One of the things you're going to see in vitamin A deficiency, but also in other fat-soluble vitamin and fatty acid deficiencies, is something called hyperfollicular keratosis. And it's basically bumps on the back of the arms and sometimes the back of the thighs. And it's bumps that look like goosebumps, but they're just there all the time. And it has to do with the keratinizing of the hair follicles. They just get hardened in there as a result of not having enough vitamin A or E or fatty acids. What are the forms of vitamin A supplementation? Well, the synthetics are usually going to say acetate or palmitate, you know, retinol palmitate, that sort of thing. The natural sources are going to be animal-derived. Some of the supplements are animal-derived, so they'll have fish liver oil in them, but they also have some of the synthetics, like the palmitates. So you see some combinations. You can get micellized liquid, you can get soft gels, and you can just get a bottle of cod liver oil, and that's going to have the pure vitamin A, the retinol from form of the vitamin A. So this concludes our vitamin A presentation, and we're going to move on to our next one. Be sure to check out the resources page for the lists of the deficiency symptoms and for also links to more advanced resources so you can go deeper. There's a lot of more depth we can go into with this.